We've had some fabulous conversations on this show about aggressive behavior and how much a dog's breed might influence these cases. And for this episode of Fresh Bites on the Bitey End of the Dog, I chat with Sara Ulias, who specializes in herding breeds. We chat about a variety of breed-specific behavior tendencies in herders and how they might impact aggression. It's an excellent episode packed with Sara's insights and experience, and I hope you enjoy. And if you are interested in hearing more about applicable and immediate steps you can use with your own dog or in your cases, I just launched a subscription series called Help for Dogs with Aggression, which is an additional format to this podcast where I walk you through a variety of aggression issues and how to solve them. You'll find a little subscribe button on Apple Podcasts where the Bitey End of the Dog is listed. Your support of the show is very much appreciated. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Bitey End of the Dog. I've got a special guest this week. We're going to be talking about herding breeds and aggression. Sara Ulias owns Listita Sun, which translates to Merry Paws. Sara is from Finland, and we're going to actually be talking about dogs from Finland. You can find Sara on Listita Sun, which is LYSTITASSUN on both Facebook and Instagram. She is a certified control on leash instructor, which is through Leslie McDevitt's program, as well as a qualified animal training instructor from Finland. And they have their own certification system out there as well. And she specializes in herding breeds and as a dog sport enthusiast. So welcome to the show, Sara.
Thank you very much. Really exciting to be here.
Yes, I'm really excited for this conversation because we're going to talk about we'd like to talk about breed-specific behaviors on the show. We've had a German Shepherd specialist in the past, and so it's great to have somebody that understands herding breeds. And you know, I was looking at Kim Brophy's book this morning and kind of just poking around in the herding breed section, and some of the descriptions she uses in the book are, you know, attentive, responsible, bossy, workaholic, and clingy dogs when talking about herding breeds. And we're describing those herding breeds. Is that what you'd say sounds kind of like what you would use as words to describe? Or maybe you want to add your own descriptions?
I would use that, yes. I think that sounds very much like my own border collie. I think herding breeds are often a bit misunderstood, because they differ from other dogs in many levels, and people somehow sometimes think that they do it on purpose, but actually they can't help it. It's in their nature.
Yes, and let's talk more about that because, you know, again, we talk a lot about breed-specific tendencies, and especially when it comes to aggression and understanding that. So when it comes to aggression, what are some of the behaviors or some of those tendencies which we need to be aware of? If you have someone going out and saying, yeah, I want to go out and get a herding breed, and we can certainly turn and talk about the specific herding breeds, but in general, herding breeds, if you want to make somebody aware of what can be problematic or what to be aware of or what tendencies, the breed-specific tendencies, what would they be?
That's a great question. I think the most important thing is to understand that the herding breed is bred to control movement. So the purpose of the dog is to herd the animals in a group and control where they are moving. That's like why they are here in the first place. And for hundreds of years, herding breeds are one of the most ancient types of dogs used in hundreds of years in different parts of the world. Because of that, if they can't have the control, if they think they are losing the control, it creates a lot of frustration and then can lead to aggressive behaviors when the dog tries to gain the control. I think that is the most common type of aggression you see in herding breeds when they are trying to chase something and nip and bite and grab for moving things.
So as humans, we've somewhat selected for this hypersensitivity or hypervigilance in the environment, which can be a problem when it comes to, you know, things that suddenly appear. We call them sudden environmental contrasts, right? And so I'd love to dive into tips for that, because I think a lot of pen owners as well as trainers might have a difficult time with dogs we've selected for that kind of hypervigilance, constantly scanning and being aware of the environment much more so than other breeds, in which they kind of sometimes notice things before, much earlier than us in the environment.
Yes.
So let's jump into some of those typical strategies you use. I know this is a broad question, but maybe you can kind of take us through what you would do in that kind of situation.
Yeah. the tendency to notice things is due that the herding breed dogs are, they need to see if one sheep out of 20 sheep is starting to move. So that's very useful skill when herding. But of course, in urban environments, might be a problem. And I have used a lot of Leslie's program, obviously. And I think the look at that game is really important for herding breed dogs, because through that we can teach them that changes they are perceiving are nothing to worry about. They are not the dog's business. And I have found that very helpful. And my own border collie Glenna, until 5 months, she didn't care about movement. She ate candy and biscuits, and I was like, oh, this is so easy. And then, like a lightning strike, she started to chase cars, and I could not get any contact with her. If I moved my hand in front of her eyes, she didn't react to that. She only looked at the moving things. And now she can do look at that for me, for the cars. So even in very difficult situations, you can work with that successfully. Other thing that I have done is the whiplash turn game, which is also from the CU program.
So tell us more about that, the whiplash turn game.
Yeah, whiplash turn is a game where you teach the dog to respond to its name very quickly. And also you can use it to teach the dog to turn away from things. I have done that so that I have taught the game and then added a little bit of movement she needs to turn away from. And then when that is successful, slightly increased the movement. And that has been also very important for us and my client dogs as well.
Do you incorporate strategies to kind of additionally satisfy those innate needs of the herding breeds? So, you know, maybe not even in the presence of the particular trigger, but sort of more just an ancillary level or holistic level. Do you add in any other activities too for dogs that need all of those outlets?
Yes, actually I do. And I think that is important part of the well-being of the herding breeds, because they have the need and it's quite easy to offer it, but you have to be careful not to overdrive, because they easily get addicted to that. But you can herd, is it called tray ball in English?
Oh, tray ball.
Like herding
yes.
balls, yes. Or you can herd toys. I usually use as a reward a toy which is in my hand, and my border collie is allowed to stalk it first, and then she can grab it. And it's like the best reward for her in the life. And if we can offer these safe opportunities to herd, then the need for use it in wrong situations, like with cars or people or bicycles, tends to lower.
So going back to those environments in which you are going to see the triggers, do you set up sort of an additional, like incompatible or what they call alternative or other behaviors? So technically, you know, the whiplash turn game we've talked about, that you can argue is a desirable replacement behavior, like the dog comes and checks in with you, or even look at that, where the dog looks at the stimulus and looks back for the reinforcer. Do you add in any additional foundational skills or anything that you typically would use that you find work best with herding breeds?
I have also used hand touch with the cue, so that's usually working very well. With herding breeds, you need to be clear with your reward markers and reward procedures and think what is rewarding enough for them to change the behaviors in the difficult situations. I usually do not train straight with the triggers. I'm more prone to train in a quiet environment and very solid behaviors. Also avoid the triggers while training.
So you mentioned of starting gradually with, as we should with training, right?
Yeah.
And then incorporating those strategies. So you teach something like touch, or how do you find like stationary behaviors impact a dog, you know, that needs to kind of be on the go and hypervigilant all the time. And we can argue they're always looking for some work. So then we ask them to station or do something that's very non-movement oriented. So look at me or down or stay or sit or those kind of behaviors. Do you ever incorporate those, or do you find that they can actually be counterintuitive because they can be too frustrating?
I do. I think the dog needs to have a solid down or a solid stop for in case of emergency. For border collies, down is usually quite easy to teach. But for some breeds, they might not want to do it when it's wet, wet or something. Or maybe two paws on a bench in the park or on a log or on a big stone can be really successful. But for too long, staying still is usually frustration. So I would incorporate those station behaviors, but make sure that it doesn't last too long. Maybe do some kind of training that you have a movement, then you have station, then movement, then you have station, where you can teach the dog that after movement, you need to chill and then you get to move again, because the movement of the dog as well is highly rewarding for active breed.
Yes, that makes sense. Now I'd love to dive into kind of the motivation for when we see aggression surface in these cases. So for instance, you might have a herding breed displaying very breed specific tendency, you know, genetic behavior where the dog is maybe chasing children and nipping at their heels, or, you know, typical herding behavior, but the motivation may be different depending on the case. So for instance, we have, let's say, a under-socialized border collie, right? We sometimes go out and get a border collie at 8 weeks and then wait, you know, many, many months before the puppy sees their first children, and the dog starts to develop fear and sort of the predatory motor sequence, or that motor pattern, is to chase and nip at the heels, but it's done to make the children go away, versus a dog that is understimulated, underriched, but they're perfectly socialized with children and they're very confident to put a label on it. And they start to chase children in the same way, and they're nipping at the heels. And The motivation is to say, you know, I'm a border collie. I want to keep all these kids in one specific place in one specific group. So there's another type of motivation, right? So how do you go about that, and how do you work with those different types of cases where it's one, let's say you have two different border collies, one's very under-socialized, fearful, and the other one's just more confident, outgoing, again, to put labels on it, but it's, what are the differences in how you'd approach those cases?
That's very good for you to ask, because it's usually that when the dog is stressed or it's afraid, the behaviors come stronger. And the dog is like taking refuge from the instinct behavior when it does not know what to do. And for those kind of dogs, I would teach some other behaviors, like touch the human, or maybe later when it's a little bit socialized with the children, like go touch the children's hand and come back to handler. Of course, still offer opportunities to herd safely. But I think in those cases, the most important thing is to build up the dog's confidence so she doesn't need to take refuge from the instinct behaviors anymore. She can do something else. And for that, the stations and hand touch and look at that also are very good.
So kind of, yeah, it's kind of working on their fear side first. It sounds like you kind of want to make sure
yes.
that the dog is feeling comfortable and safe in the environment. And then you're going to say something. What is it about the other type of dog?
Yeah. So if I have a dog that wants to control the movement there as well, even if the dog seems to be confident, it might be that seeing movement out of control makes the dog a little bit panicked. So the dog feels that it cannot do its task, and it might cause some panic. So it might be that they too need to work a little bit with confidence as well. And I would do these sensations a lot. And with that kind of dog, I would look at that with very high rewards. Maybe the whiplash turn exercise with very high rewards, teaching them that the moving children is not their business. And a lot of impulse control is not the most preferred word, but to help her not to do what is the most appealing alternative behavior.
Let's talk more about that, what you said just there, the impulse control, because it is a hot topic. And depending on who you talk to, they might not even call it that. Some of them will say it's just all stimulus control. But I do believe there are certain levels of arousal that can happen in dogs that we can help and to maintain that control, that aspect of things. So sort of like the fuel behind the fire. Arousal certainly is a thing in animals. And we can see that sometimes with these dogs that are often used for working tasks. So again, your working line shepherds or herding breeds sometimes have a difficult time with that. Especially, you know, there's the saying that herding breeds or the border collies, they're too smart for their own good, right?
Yeah.
They're actually very smart. And that also presents a difficulty when it comes to those subtle nuances like controlling arousal. So maybe, for example, we've got a border collie that is quick to go from 0 to 60, as they were to say. They just quickly ramp up their hypervigilance in getting into that working mode.
Uh-huh.
Because again, as humans, we've selected for that particular aspect, and the breeds that could be problematic for us also, when the dog's exposed to a trigger or provocative stimulus in the environment, they quickly go from 0 to 60. And so that arousal spikes.
Uh-huh.
And there's arguments that we need to teach the dog how to control that, as well as sort of control that impulse control, or, you know, put impulse control on that dog for another label again. But are there any specific exercises you teach your clients to work with that particular aspect? You know, just controlling that arousal or recognizing when that happens?
Yeah. I think you are absolutely right that the arousal is a big issue, and it might be issue in many levels, because usually we see young shepherd dogs that can't eat when they are aroused, and then the rewarding in the situations can be difficult because the dog might not want to take any cookies, and sometimes a toy reward can be quite challenging. I do the what I described it before, that we have the movement and station movement, station, like teaching the dog that if you come a bit down, then you can move again. Also, Leslie's exercise of switch game, which teaches the dog to calm down, and then it gets to resume the play. And I have found this exercise really helpful. Sometimes the case is also that the dog is actually never calm. So when people get active breed and they are told that you should activate them and offer exercise and offer brain work, and then they have a puppy who is constantly on the move, and if you see activation, you are maybe really quick to think that the dog is bored, when actually it is tired, but it doesn't know how to rest. And we should at home teach the dogs that when nothing is happening, they can relax. That is an important skill as well, because I have heard about border collies that their owners have never seen them sleep. I think that's quite worrisome, but that includes other breeds as well.
So you mentioned relaxation there. Do you incorporate relaxation protocols, sort of like Karen Overall's relaxation protocol, or some of the other different relaxation exercises that are out there?
I have used Karen Overall's relaxation protocol. I think that is absolutely very useful with herding breeds. But also, I think like basic enrichment stuff like licky mats and snuffle mats and scatter feeding and hanging without doing anything, sniff walks when you take your dog out in the woods in a long line so they cannot chase wildlife, but they can sniff and enjoy the nature, are very important. And these often people forget them as they are keen to offer ball throwing and trick training and that kind of stuff.
And you mentioned out in the woods and seeing critters and things like that. And I'd want to ask you about the predatory behavior of herding breeds. And do you feel like it's more prone in herding breeds, or do you see it more than other breeds? Like, let's say the dogs are out, and I'd love to ask you what kind of critters are in Finland, but let's say you have you see a critter or a squirrel or cat or something out and about. Do you think the herding breeds are more prone to that because of their hypervigilance, or is it more because they lean towards chasing small critters than other breeds? So what are your thoughts on that?
I think they are. I have actually two types of herding breeds. I have a Border Collie, and then I have a Polski Owczarek Nisini. I don't know if you know Pons in America, but they are like big, hairy, like a lot of hair, and not so hypervigilant. And if I go into the woods, they only see birds if they walk straight to them. And my Border Collie spots every bird in every bush, and she stalks them first, and then she starts to near and chase. And I'm pretty sure that if given enough practice, she would also grab and kill them. But I think this is something we see also in terriers, maybe some bird hunting breeds as well, but they usually do not grab, they only stalk the birds.
All right, we're going to take a short break to hear a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Sada. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you are enjoying this episode. I have a very special offer that I am announcing just before the Aggression and Dogs conference this year. You've heard me talk about the Aggression and Dogs Master Course on this podcast, and for a limited time to celebrate the third annual conference, I'm going to launch a bundle offer that includes the course and all 14 webinars on aggressivedog.com. Yes, that's all of the webinars. The webinars alone would typically cost more than $450 to purchase together, but I'm including them for free in this special bundle deal with the Aggression and Dogs Master Course. Just some of the topics for the webinars include how to break up a dog fight, dog-to-cat aggression, dog-to-child-directed aggression, and treat and retreat with some of the most respected behavior pros in our field, including Suzanne Clothier, Jen Shryock, Trish McMillan, and Dr. Jessica Heckman, just to name a few. And the Master Course gives you access to 23 modules on everything from assessment to safety to medical issues to the behavior change plans we use in a number of different cases, including lessons taught by Dr. Chris Pockel, Kim Brophy, and Jessica Dolce. You'll also receive access to a private Facebook group with over 1,000 of your fellow colleagues and dog pros all working with aggression cases. After you finish the course, you gain access to private live group mentor sessions with me, where we practice working through cases together. And if you need CEUs, we've got you covered. We're approved for just about every major training and behavior credential out there. This is truly the flagship course offered on aggression in dogs, and is perfect for pet pros that want to set themselves apart and take their knowledge and expertise to the next level, or even for pet owners who are seeking information to help their own dog. You'll receive all 14 webinars, the master course, mentor sessions, and access to the private Facebook group for all just the price of the master course, which is only $495. There's only going to be 50 bundles available in this offer, and I will drop a link to the bundle in the show notes for this episode. The offer will expire on October 9th, 2022, which is just 1 week after the conference, though the bundle typically sells out quickly, so please take advantage if you are interested. Head on over to the show notes for this episode in the podcast platform you're listening to this episode in, and click on the Aggression in Dogs Master Course and Expert Webinar Bundle link. Thanks again for your support of the show, and I hope to see you in the Master Course. All right, we're back here with Sada Ulias, where we're talking about herding breeds and aggression. So when having a herding breed, you really have to be on point with noticing or at least managing it before they take off after that actual prey.
Yes.
So the next question I have for you, let's kind of thought that was coming to my mind is when we don't provide the needs and we start to see maladaptive behaviors occur. So things like that, even compulsive behavior, sometimes you might get, you know, like light chasing or shadow chasing at a dog that's, again, we've selected for to be hypervigilant when it comes to the aggression or the aggression cases you've seen. So what are some of the behaviors you've seen that significant lack of enrichment or exercise create an issue or the aggression issue? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's usually a big issue, not the only cause, but we have to make sure that well-being and enrichment needs and exercise needs are properly met. Because as I said before, if the dog gets stressed or it gets wrong way poured, some boredom is good, but too much is not good, then they are taking the instinct behaviors, like entertain themselves or if they have nothing else to do. For example, my border collie Glenna hurt her toe and she was ordered to take a 3-week sickness leave at home and no exercise, even though I used several hours a day to try to enrich her at home with only food, no toys, no movement. I think that was successful inside. But when we got out for her doing her stuff and a little bit of rehabilitation movement, she went like totally nuts. She just ran in a circle and the car chasing got temporarily back. We had very successful training and there was no problem. And with 3 weeks inside, she started it again. So if I think that is always the first thing you need to take into consideration when you see aggressive behaviors in herding breeds. It's not always the reason, but if there is some, the dog lacks something, you can't really train it before you get this side right.
So it's a very important point you make. You make there's really satisfying those innate needs of the dog. And that must have been like torture for you and your dog and being confined for so long, especially a herding breed. Can't imagine. It must just be like going from solitary confinement to back to Disney World, right?
Yes.
In the sense that it must be so overwhelming for both you and your dog when you start to see that.
And when you said overwhelming, I think that is very good to bear in mind that herding breeds are bred to work in a countryside when there's only the sheep, maybe a couple of birds in the sky, maybe a tractor in the skylight, but not much going on. Only the cattle or sheep they are working on. And when we take them in the city, there are like cars and bicycles and children and everything. So it's overwhelming for them because they are not bred to let those things go. It all comes to them, their brain gets overheated for all the information, as some other dog, some other breed might well be able to not see and not hear anything.
That's a good example. So along those lines, what tips do you have for the herding breeds or herding breed owners that live in the city environments? You know, additional to what you've mentioned already. So look at that, the whiplash turn game, giving them or making sure their needs are met through ancillary activities and making sure they have enough downtime. So let's say you've got a client, you're going to meet them in downtown and in city environments, and they've got this issue. And we can reasonably argue it's very difficult to control those environments because there's so many sudden contrasts. Do you have any specific tips or tricks for that particular situation?
I think the safe management is really important. So you need to preferably have a harness with the handle so you can grab it. You can teach the grab to be a nice thing for the dog so it does not add the scariness. And also a very good leash, preferably double keep from back and to front. So if something happens, you always have a good grip so that your dog does not run away. And I would advise to avoid the busiest hours, so maybe not in the morning or evening rush hour for walking, the quieter hours of the day, parks, some streets only for walkers, because when the dog gets like overwhelmed, there is only a little you can do in that point anymore. And the frustration starts to build and you need to get some peace for the dog to calm down. If you only build and build and build and build and build, it will explode sometime.
So if you had one exercise or one technique to teach owners that would be the most valuable for them in the city environment to prevent this over-threshold moments or to work on the behavior, what would it be? Which particular exercise would you kind of think is the top of your list for the city dog owner? So proactive or preemptive work versus responding when the dog has already gone over-threshold?
I would say it would be the look at that game because it teaches the dog not only to disengage from the distractions, but also if you do it a lot and with under threshold, it teaches the dog not to notice so much things anymore. For example, I have done it with in dog sports when my border collie finds very hard if someone else is retrieving a dumbbell. She would also love to do that. So we have worked so that when she does look at that with the other dog retrieving, she gets for a reward to retrieve a toy. So you can also alter the reward so that reward is offering the dog the same experience than the actual distraction would have offered.
Very important point of meeting the function of that behavior or satisfying that need. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So I've been interviewing guests on this podcast from many different countries, and I've always, for my own selfish interest, kind of love to learn more about the culture of dogs in the different countries. So I'd love to hear more about Finland's and how dogs are treated there. And, you know, again, another really broad question we can talk for hours about, right? But compared to the United States or some other countries, what are the differences? Do you have like a lot of street dogs, or the dogs are very well managed and unleashed all the time, or do they have a lot of freedom in their environments? Is it more controlled than what you like to see? And, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on what a dog's life is like in Finland.
Well, I think a dog's life in Finland is very good. We have 0D street dogs, no dogs at all without a home. Of course, some rescue dogs from bad owners, but very few. I think in Finland it's a bit divide city versus rural areas, because we have a lot of woods and a lot of land. And in those parts of the country, there is a lot of hunting dogs, which actually get to hunt and are bred only for hunting purposes. I don't know that side so much, but the most common breeds, like if you only list for registrations for one breed, are Labradors and Finnish hunting breeds. And then in the cities, we have small dogs and herding breeds for dog sports. Also, Labradors are very usual breed to see in sports.
So it sounds like they really respect the utility or the purpose of many of the dog breeds there. And they're often, it's understandable the kind of work they do because of the landscape there and the sort of culture. So let me ask you this, how much aggression are you seeing? Do you see a lot of high level bite cases, or, you know, people with serious injuries, or is that not very tolerated from a cultural standpoint?
That is not tolerated. And I think that is not very common. If there is some serious case, it's all over the news. It's not very usual. I think in Finland, usually people train their dogs, at least the basics. And in cities, as I live in Turku, which is like the fourth biggest city in Finland, almost everyone with the dog comes to a puppy class and then maybe a basic skills class. And they learn about handling the dogs and socialization and that kind of stuff. So very rare bad aggression cases, maybe more like dog-to-dog cases. As in Finland, you are forbid to let your dog run free in the summer because of the wildlife animals. And I think that is something, how should I call it? We are maybe not so socialized people, and maybe our dogs are not so socialized as well when it comes to total strangers meeting and walks.
That's very, very interesting. So it sounds like we have many lessons to learn from Finland and the culture of dogs and how they're raised and accepted into society, as well as the socialization aspect. I loved what you were saying about the puppy classes and how common it is there for that to happen. So yes, thank you for sharing that information about Finland. So Sara, where can people find you, or are you up to now for projects? And if you want to send people your way, where would they go?
I have a Instagram and Facebook account, Lystitassun, as you mentioned, and also a website, but unfortunately it is only in Finnish. But if you are interested, it is Google Find is very well.
Excellent, excellent. And I'll be sure to link to those in the show notes for everybody to get to the City Dog Herding Breed in the city, which is obviously a much needed course around the world. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. and how that goes along. So Sara, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much for the invitation. This was really great.
It's always so great to dive into the nuances of breed-specific behavior tendencies, and I really appreciate Sara jumping into this episode with me to chat about herders. I'd also love to hear what you would like for additional topics in future episodes of both the Bitey End of the Dog and the Help for Dogs with Aggression subscription series. You can reach out by emailing podcast@aggressivedog.com. That's podcast@aggressivedog.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I thank you for tuning into the show. Stay well, my friends. Thanks for joining me for the Bitey End of the Dog. If you like the show, please feel free to subscribe, share, and give a rating. And hop on over to aggressivedog.com or theloosleashacademy.com for more information about webinars, courses, and conferences, all dedicated to helping dogs with aggression issues. And don't forget, the Aggression in Dogs Conference will be happening from October 22nd to 24th with 12 amazing speakers, all streaming from a television studio in Chicago. It's going to be a truly unique event in 2021.